All right. I'm the presenter for the next presentation here, and I'm presenting on a master's student of mine, Robin Taylor, who can't be here because she is gainfully employed, and we decided that was the better option. This is her master's degree, the project that she did for her master's program at Washington State University. It's quantification of food policy councils within the Puget Sound region, and the Puget Sound region is that area surrounding Seattle. So the role of food policy councils was something that she wanted to look into, and this is just straight out of some textbooks here. It's their role is to recommend new laws, business models, or collaborations, update methods based on science, innovation, or legal change, represent public opinion, encourage participation and representation of populations, and to engage in sustainability, democracy, and transparency. So you're probably all very familiar with food policy councils, but one of the things that Robin did for her project is that she did a survey in the Puget Sound area, and so in order to do that survey, you have to define all your terms. So this was part of the survey, is just defining what it is to be a food policy council. So looking further at some of these definitions, again, this was all part of her survey. It's important that we're all on the same page. So a food policy is any policy decision, action, or inaction by any group that affects the production, supply, processing, distribution, recycling, quality, purchase, consumption, price, or protection of food, food systems, or food waste systems. So you can see that this affects us in agriculture. So for those of us who teach agriculture, who work in agricultural production systems, at some point, you know, somebody's using those systems, and at some point, somebody is governing those systems. And so food policy councils play a role there. So what is the food system? Again, this is all part of her survey to define these terms so that people responding to the survey could answer the questions from a similar base. So food system is the collection of resources involved in the production of food for human or animal consumption involving cultural, social, geographic, educational, economic, and political contexts. And of course, it's a very complicated, complex web. Food justice was another term that she defined, and defined that as all people at all times have fair and equitable access to healthy, nutritious foods that are affordable and culturally relevant. Food sovereignty, another important term that many of the organizations working in our area are dealing with, and so this is defined as the right of people to establish and develop sustainable production, pricing, distribution, trade of local foods, addressing the cultural, religious, and social needs of a community. There's a lot of overlap between some of these terms, so when you're answering questions or when our respondents are answering questions, it can be a little bit confusing. So the study objectives for her project were to provide a new level of detailed information about the food policy councils active in the Puget Sound region. Again, this is the greater Seattle area. Create the foundation for a regional map of food policy councils and what work they were involved in, and to assist current and future food policy councils to work collaboratively, ultimately because essentially they're all competing for the same resources. So study region, you can see Washington tucked up there in the left corner, and that is the Puget Sound region in general, but we were actually a little bit more focused on that. We were just right around the Seattle, greater Seattle area. So the methods for her study was first to define food policy councils based on the existing literature, and so that's what I've just gone through all the terms with, and then identifying variations of food policy councils. So what she did is she did a search, a web search of all the published lists of groups, and then she contacted individuals and, you know, did a, what is that called, a snowball effect where, you know, who knows who to gather, basically try to put together a list of all the active groups in the area. In defining food policy council, she looked at the terms nutrition, food systems, food hub, and food access. All of these terms were areas that food policy councils were working with. And so she ended up with a list of 25 food policy councils in the Puget Sound region, and this is the list of groups that she ended up sending her survey to. So survey, she had a 10-question survey structure. It was a very simple structure, made it as simple as possible, kind of, you know, checking the boxes as opposed to writing paragraphs of text. Looking for background information on each of the groups. She defined policy and the other terms that I have already gone through here. She invited all of the 25 food policy councils that she identified to participate, and 11 responded. And one of the things that she learned as a master's student here is you put out the survey, you ask once, you ask twice, and you have to do more than that. And so in, you know, debriefing at the end of her project, you know, we went through some ideas of what she could have done to get a better response, but that's just the way it goes. So going through the data here, what did we find? Length of existence, how long these groups had been in existence. Again, 11 respondents, so 7 or 64% had been in existence for more than 5 years, and that's actually a pretty good track record. So less than half had only been there for you know, less than 5 years, so one to three, 5 years. Size of the organization, what I really want to point out here is that all of them really rely on volunteers. Volunteers are the base of action for food policy councils in our area. And very, very few of them have any interaction with government groups, and universities are considered a government group. So there's very, very little collaboration with government groups. There's paid staff and work groups and work parties. Paid staff is minimal for the most part, and there's always a struggle for resources to pay their staff. So most of the work is done by volunteers. That's a core function of food policy councils, is to manage volunteers, and that's what the staff end up doing. So looking at what their goals are, these are their stated goals for these respondents: food access, food policy, food justice, and awareness, you know, top the list in terms of what their goals are to create these access to food, policies around food, just food justice, and then awareness about these issues. And then collaboration is a really essential component here because, again, they're all competing for the same resources, so they have to collaborate. Legislation, local legislation, government support, food sovereignty, statewide legislation, these all also are goals, their stated goals. And independent support is something that some of them are looking for to get off of the grant cycle, the, you know, that constant ask. But it's pretty hard. So looking at engagement, half of them currently work on policy, and one of them had worked on policy in the past, but a third of them don't work on policy at all. So while they identify themselves as food policy councils, a third of them don't actually work in policy. And I think that's perhaps just in trying to reflect on why, you know, why these are their responses, I think maybe they don't see food sovereignty, you know, issues that they're working with in food sovereignty perhaps as a policy issue. Or maybe they haven't made the connections to try to deal with the issues around food sovereignty in their communities. So it's, but a third of them, again, identified as not working on policy, even though they identified themselves as a food policy council. So, interesting. At the level of where they work, city, county, you can see that, you know, half of them work at the city level, half of them work at the county level, a third of them at the regional level, a third of them at the state level, a third at the federal level, very few at the institutional level. An institution in this sense is mostly hospitals, jails. So again, it's food policy council, food sovereignty, food access to food. And think about the institutions that are serving those communities. So it's not institution like government institutions or universities. It's more like, you know, where do people get their food from? And then two of them don't engage in any policy work at all. So they, you know, you kind of ask, you know, in a survey, you try to get, you ask these questions in several different ways, right, to try to get to what people do. And so three of them indicated they never worked on policy, and then two of them in this separate question indicated they don't work on policy. So. So what's their policy activity engagement? Food system advocacy is definitely the number one thing that most of them are doing. So, you know, two-thirds of them are working on advocacy for food systems. And then also identifying problems to be addressed through policy. So they spend quite a bit of time trying to identify policy issues and then spend a bit of time then trying to work on those policy issues. That's the way I see that. So the developing policy proposals. Endorsement of organizations or institution working on specific policies. This comes back to the collaboration. Collaboration is really essential to the survival of these groups because, again, they're all competing for the same resources. They have to work together to be successful, and that's coming from them. That's my telling you what they tell me. So that's the way it is in their world. Public education, trying to get, you know, the public support for the issues that they're working on. And then policy implementation is actually pretty low on their list, is actually trying to implement those policies. Lobbying for policies, it's again, pretty low. And then that formation of coalitions, working together, collaborating. So policy activities and challenges, this is coming out of the survey. Basically what they see is that many of the Puget Sound Food Policy Councils work with diverse populations. So just as, you know, Rebecca had in her slide, we have these immigrant communities. And diverse immigrant communities who don't necessarily collaborate or work together or see themselves at all having anything in common, and they're within the city, and so different groups are working with different groups. different policy councils working with different groups, farmers market, access to foods, access to ethnic foods that they're then familiar with, serving a significant role in the creation and implementation of food policies that then serve those communities. And then funding their workforce limitation was the key issue that kept coming out. So getting enough money to pay staff to do work was the number one issue that all of these groups faced. So characteristics of food policy councils in the Puget Sound, just kind of summarizing all of this, policy creation, planning, support, or advocacy was about what two-thirds of them were really working on. Some, again, two to three of them were not actually actively engaged in policy at any level. They do serve a diverse population, so again, these immigrant communities is probably one of the main focus for most of these groups. Access to food is where they see themselves most active. Volunteer participation, volunteers make all of their programs work. And so volunteer management, volunteer organization, is probably the number one management issue that they have within their groups. And then they have to collaborate to survive because, again, they're all competing for the same resources. This just kept coming up over and over and over again. And then I should say that we also had some interviews following up on the survey that I'm not presenting here. But, again, these are the main issues that came up. So conclusion is basically it's a circular economy, so to speak. Food sovereignty, formation and function of food systems, variation in size and experience of the food policy councils. And then food advocacy, all of the groups were doing food advocacy, and some of them are doing it without actually getting involved in policy issues. So future research needs, this is my student's perspective, you know, what the key lesson she learned is that she really wished that she'd done a better job getting a better response. I thought 44% response wasn't bad, but if you look at the, you know, the end number of 11, you know, it's not great, but, you know, I don't know. In our work, I think when you get more than 25%, you know, you're thinking you did a good job. So, and then she did a series of interviews, and we call these case studies to identify underlying interactions, motivations, and influencing factors of these groups because they do all work together. They are all competing in the same arena for resources as well as actually their activities that they're working on. So I just want to further acknowledge this is all work from my master's student, Robin Taylor, who did this study as her graduate requirement for the MS in Ag degree. And she's now working full-time for the city of Seattle. So it worked from an education perspective as well as her goal. So I have time for questions if anybody has any. Yes. Foundations, so basically gifts. So gifts are probably one of the main ways that most of these groups get monies, but there's also government grant writing, city grant writing, but probably foundations. So Bullitt Foundation, I'm trying to think what the big foundations are in our area, but yeah. I think it would be getting enough money to make an endowment. I think in what is $1 million endowment, $54,000 a year or something in cash. I'm looking at Chad here. You might know. 40? $1 million endowment brings you $40,000 a year in cash, you know, expenditures. So you got to, you know, it's not a lot, right? I mean, gosh, 40, it doesn't pay any, you know, how many people in the room does that pay, $40,000 a year? It takes a lot of money to get those you know hard dollars in the bank that you can live on them for as a group paying 5-6 staff members, etc. Was there another question, Matt? That's right.